This is Taking Aim with
Roshan Men
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Dysfunctional Capitalist State, Part 3. Human rights begin at home, a scathing assessment of social reality in America. On March 13th, China's Information Office of the State Council published a report titled The Human Rights Record of the United States in 2009. The document is a rebuttal to the annual U.S. State Department country reports on human rights practices released 2 days earlier on March 11th, delivering the U.S. a well-deserved dose of its own medicine does not absolve the Chinese regime of its gross violations of human rights. 1.3 billion people, super-exploited workers, and desperately poor peasants. That said, the Chinese report is a factual, sober document drawn from government and media sources. First, let's return to Ralph Poynter and an update of the case of Lynn Stewart. Ralph?
I visited Lynn yesterday, and already I miss her. Today is Tuesday. I visited her yesterday, Monday. Shout out to Lynn, and I'd like to say to her cellmates, good looking out for my lady. I would like to say to you, Ralph, along with your report on your China's report on America's human rights record, it reminds me of 10, 15 years ago when the Russians, after being attacked furiously by the Americans for their human rights record, published a report in the New York Times documented America's missteps, America's history in human rights abuses, and, you know, like more or less went back to the old standard of let he who has not sinned throw the first stone. And America was embarrassed and stung by that. Change nothing. America will be embarrassed and stung by this. Change is nothing. But I would like to also say to all of the listeners, I have recently been fired as the messenger to the webmaster because Lynn noted that the web is far behind and in the examination, the weak link in the process was me. So I have been replaced by a highly efficient person, as I have been promising. The show will be up on the website, and I'm asking Ralph to put the shows that particularly deal with the judges of the Second Circuit in dealing in their underhanded and tabloid-type argument, no, not an argument, statements against Lynn Stewart that had nothing to do with reality and were totally unrelated to the case. So, Ralph, I'm asking you to go into detail the article that was in the Wall Street Journal outlining what the lawyers in Guantanamo had been doing. They're under stronger, more strict SAMs than Lynn was, but they walked all over the SAMs. Not that I'm complaining about it, because they had to walk all over the SAMs to begin to defend their tortured clients. But what was noted that no one picked up on this. The Tea Party people were attacking them for being there as unpatriotic citizens, and then it was uncovered that they had broken every SAM regulation, including the names of the other people in the institution, what was happening in Iraq, what was happening in Afghanistan, what was happening in Pakistan. The whole panoply of rules were broken, but no one reported it. I think it's instructive to notice the double standard, to notice the selective prosecution.
Well, Ralph, the essence of the matter is that the appellate court, the Second Circuit, has attempted to make a huge crime out of Lynn's having breached the administrative ruling of the prison, which is unconstitutional in the first place, but leaving that aside. What we are talking about with respect to the SAMs, the special administrative measures, are administrative rulings, and the penalty for breach of these, and any lawyer worth his salt can't defend his client without breaching them, because effectively the special administrative measures deny the lawyer the entitlement to disclose, discuss, or make known the opinions and views of their client, the status of their client's case, when the government uses the press as a bully pulpit and orchestrates with propaganda the state accusations and false data regarding their charges against the accused. The critical point here is that the Second Circuit judges are turning an administrative issue, because when lawyers fail to abide by these so-called SAMs, the worst that can happen is that the prison authorities can prevent them from seeing their client until the issue is resolved. It's not a prosecutorial offense, yet the judges want to give Lynn Stewart decades in prison based upon her presumptive violation of these special administrative measures. The whole thing is a sham. It's a hysterical political rant by these appellate court judges. Hasn't an iota to do with judicial appropriateness, or let alone an offense that would be warranting decades in prison. This is essentially a hanging judge in Alice in Wonderland, the Second Circuit. And the point you're making, which is I think is important here, is that with respect to Guantanamo, the lawyers who were representing those prisoners communicated with them. And by even communicating with their own clients, they were violating the equivalent of SAMs. But nobody's raised a peep about this. But with respect to Lynn Stewart, she's defending a falsely accused person, and by so doing, exposing the nature of this war on terror as a false flag operation, because the Sheikh had nothing to do with organizing or implementing the blowing up of the World Trade Center, let alone the so-called Landmarks plot, for which the hanging Judge Mukasey gave him 100 years, while his partner on the Second Circuit wants to give at least a third of that sentence to Lynn.
I'd like to add one more thing. People must understand that there were no secret messages snuck in or out of the prison. There was a public press release to a lawyer in Egypt, but the media keeps forgetting that, and every time I read something, it's about sending a secret message. It's a lie. Thank you so much for this opportunity. See you soon, Lynn, hopefully, and see your inmate. Thank you again, Ralph.
Thank you.
We return to the Chinese report, the human rights record of the United States in 2009, a 14-page report divided in six major sections: life, property, and personal security, referring to murder in the United States, civil and political rights, economic, social, and cultural rights, racial discrimination, rights of women and children, U.S. violation of human rights against other nations.
Well, Maya, let me just say one thing before we examine the particulars of this report. In the preface or introduction to this, the Chinese stipulates the following, quote, "The world judge of human rights is the role assigned to itself by the State Department of the United States when it releases its country reports on human rights. As in previous years, the rights are full of accusations of human rights situations in over 190 countries and regions, including China. But they turn a blind eye, dodge, and cover up rampant human rights abuses in their own territory. The human rights record of the United States in 2009 is our effort to help people around the world understand the real situation of rights in the United States." Now, this is a very important step. It reflects the fact that the United States is effectively declaring a trade war on China and attempting to do, as it's always made clear it intended to do, fragment China, break up that state, as it is in the process of doing throughout the Arab East and Central Asia. China is in its sights, as is every country in the world, every population in the world. China is starting to fight back. But the authorities, as Maya indicated, we have to be very clear here. It's not only they have the most billionaires outside the United States, but that oligarchy is up to its eyeballs in lockstep with the U.S. banks and their practices. And as such, children in China of 9 years old are sleeping by their sewing machines so that the Gap and other stores can have the exported goods that we buy at low cost based upon the sweatshop labor of the masses of the Chinese people. No independent trade unions. Let us be understanding this as we examine the devastating document by China with respect to the United States.
We're starting with Section 2 on civil and political rights. It notes that according to Amnesty International, in the first 10 months of 2009, police officers in the United States killed 45 people due to unrestrained use of taser guns. The youngest of the victims was only 15. Furthermore, let us look at the murders by police. Over the past 2 years, the number of New York police officers under review for unrestrained use of violence was up 50%. According to a New York Police Department firearms discharge report released on November 17, 2009, the city's police fired 588 bullets in 2007, killing 10 people. 75% of the New York City police shootings are on people who are African American.
Well, Maya, what we're looking at here is that in major U.S. cities, police stop, question, and frisk over a million people a year, which is a sharply higher number than just a year ago, as Huffington Post had documented. Prisons in the United States are packed with inmates. According to the report released by the U.S. Justice Department on December 8, 2009, over 7.3 million people are in the U.S. correction system. The correction system population increased compared to 2008, and 2.3 million people are held directly in prisons, the equivalent of about one out of every 198 people in the United States. From 2000 to 2008, the U.S. prison system increased an average of 1.8% annually. The California government is now proposing to send tens of thousands of immigrants held in the state to Mexico to ease its overcrowded prison system. The United States is one great concentration camp, brothers and sisters.
Ralph, that was a proposal of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was going to pay the Mexican government to build prisons and hold the undocumented workers from California, transfer them back to Mexico. If you look further in the report, you find out that 90% of the people in U.S. prisons, of the 7.3 million people, are minority males, and 50% are African Americans. So we have the assault through murder on African Americans. We also have the number of people who are stopped and frisked by police, mostly African Americans, and we have 50% of the people in prison, African American. This is an assault. It's a war on Black America.
Yes, it is the war, the ongoing and continuing war on Black America that has defined capitalist history in the United States from the inception of the colonial settler occupation of North America. That has been its defining content. It is the means through which the working class is constantly pitted one against the other, divide and rule. But the devastating documentation here, think about it, 10% of the population is African American. People who are subject to the criminalization of poverty and the incarceration, not merely for months but for decades, are Black.
Ralph, 50% of the people in federal prisons are African American. 30% are undocumented workers. That is, they are immigrants. Most of them are not accused of a crime.
And the basic rights of prisoners in the United States, of course, are non-existent. Rape of inmates by prison staff members is widely reported and on the increase, according to the U.S. Justice Department report cited here. Sexual abuse by prison staff members of inmates is rampant in 93 federal prison sites. It has doubled over the last 8 years. The Washington Post confirms that the sexual abuse of inmates in U.S. prisons, this is a report of the Washington Post on September 11, 2009, is endemic. The New York Times is cited by the China Report on June 24, 2009, in a federal survey of 63,000 federal and state inmates. Nearly 5% have been sexually abused at least once in the previous 12 months. There were at least 60,000 rapes of prisoners across the United States during the same period. The widespread disease amongst inmates is something that is examined here and documented in minute detail. A report by the Human Rights Watch released in March 2009 said the New York State prison system registered the highest numbers of prisoners with HIV in the country. No access to treatment is provided. Inmates are denied treatment of any kind, according to the Human Rights Watch report on March 24, 2009, cited herein.
Brothers and sisters, I refer you to the three-part program that Ralph and I did several years ago called Buried Alive, which goes into great detail, particularly about the maximum security system in the prisons across the United States, but also about what takes place place in the state prisons, local and county jails. It is an harrowing three-part program. It's on our website, Buried Alive. Ralph, let's go on to the section about freedom of speech and freedom of the press and internet freedom.
Yes.
Because the U.S. government monitors and restricts our freedoms, wiretaps, eavesdropping, and so on. And we're going to go into some of the specifics from the report.
Maya, the role of the intelligence services and the military in controlling free speech, freedom of association, and of absolutely eradicating any content to civil rights or civil liberties in the United States is nowhere better illuminated in the case of Lynn Stewart, who is being accused of aiding terror by virtue of the fact that she defended someone falsely accused of that charge. Not only are free speech rights violated, but constitutional protections disappear. And the report here documents that, quote, U.S. citizens' freedom to access and distribute information is under strict supervision. The U.S. National Security Agency has installed special eavesdropping equipment around the United States. They wiretap calls, faxes, emails, then they collect domestic communication. And although this program was nominally and originally targeted Arab Americans, it includes every citizen in the United States. The document establishes that the National Security Agency has installed 25 massive eavesdropping facilities in San Jose, San Diego, Seattle, Los Angeles, and Chicago, amongst other major cities. The NSA has announced that it is building a huge 1 million square foot data warehouse at a cost of $1.5 billion at Camp Williams in Utah, and another huge and massive data warehouse in San Antonio as part of the National Security Agency's new so-called Cyber Command. The report said that a man named Nacho was convicted on 19 counts of insider trading and sentenced to 6 years in prison because he refused to participate in NSA surveillance program. And in order to prevent him from disclosing it, they framed him up on 19 counts of insider trading and locked him away. The China report is extraordinary in its elucidation of the utter criminal nature of the state apparatus in the U.S.
When we talk about surveillance, we must refer to two specific acts. One is the U.S. Patriot Act, and the other is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act Amendments of 2008. With the Patriot Act, we have to point out that it allowed law enforcement agencies to search telephone, email communications, medical, financial, and other records. And I always refer to the fact that the HIPAA Act, which is a so-called privacy, Medical Privacy Records Act, has a part of it that says that any police or U.S. federal agency can request from your doctor, unbeknownst to you, your medical records. And no doctor will treat you in the United States if you get Medicare or if you have any health insurance unless you sign that HIPAA Privacy Act. Ralph?
Well, here's the point about that. For many, many years, as you know, I refused to sign these things. One way or another, I would take them away and then not bring them back signed. Very often, doctors refuse to treat me because, brothers and sisters, anybody who has had to see a physician understands, you're presented with a form called the privacy form. You're asked to sign it, and you're being told that it's to protect your privacy. The absolute opposite is the truth. Your signature on that document means that you have acquiesced and agreed to allowing the medical records of your most intimate and personal treatment and condition to be made available to any police and intelligence authority at command. And by virtue of your acquiescing in it through your signature, you are forfeiting your right to challenge the constitutionality of same because you have now signed a contract agreeing to permit this. This is the duplicity of the authorities deploying the medical system and enveloping doctors in this process where nobody in the United States can receive medical attention without first signing away your right to privacy.
Ralph, the Patriot Act.
The definition of terrorism under the Patriot Act, the China report makes clear, has been expanded so broadly as to constitute any action you take in the voicing of your opinion, communication with people overseas, making observations about the political state of the world on a telephone call, sending an email or a note, or sending a letter to people, anything in which you challenge the official fiction about the events that, such as 9/11, let alone the appropriateness of accusing people in other countries of terrorism when they exercise their rights against authoritarian states or they defend themselves against arbitrary arrest and torture. If you so much as surprise the person with whom you're communicating by questioning the legitimacy of this, you can then be enfolded under the expanded definition of terrorism under the Patriot Act and are not merely a person who can be charged with being an enemy combatant, brothers and sisters, but as we will discuss later, you can be assassinated. The United States has now officially declared its carrying out of assassination of those who are considered to be aiders or abettors of terrorism under the definition so described here in the Patriot Act.
And, Ralph, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act amendment of 2008 granted immunity to the telecommunications companies who were being sued. It gave immunity to the telecommunications companies that take part in the wiretapping programs and authorized the government once again to wiretap any international communications between the United States and people overseas. It's important to note that when you look at the Internet, most of the Internet hub stations are in the United States, and the United States controls the Internet organization. One thing I would like to look at that's not in the report, McCain and Lieberman's Enemy Belligerent Act could set the U.S. on the path to military dictatorship by Liliana Segura, published March 19th. Refers to legislation that has been proposed by Senators John McCain and Joe Lieberman. It's a bill called the Enemy Belligerent Interrogation, Detention, and Prosecution Act of 2010, and it's now going before committees in Congress. It's only 12 pages long, but it is so devastating in its content. It proposes to grant the president the power to order the arrest, the interrogation, and the imprisonment of anyone, eliminating habeas corpus, eliminating any due process. This includes U.S. citizens, permanent residents in the United States, anyone. The president would have the authority to do so indefinitely, on the sole suspicion that a person is affiliated with terrorism, and there is no definition of terrorism. The president would be doing this in his sole authority as commander-in-chief. This is a throwback to all the torture memorandums that were published during the Bush administration, where the Justice Department was claiming that President Bush, as commander-in-chief, because of the so-called war on terror, this permanent war on terror, that enabled him to have the authority. The actual wording is that an individual who is captured or otherwise comes into the custody or under effective control of the United States, who is suspected of engaging in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners through an act of terrorism or by other means in violation of the laws of war or of purposefully and materially supporting such hostilities, and who may be an unprivileged enemy belligerent, the individual shall be placed in military custody for purposes of initial interrogation and determination of status in accordance with the provisions of this act. And we should note that the phrase unprivileged enemy belligerent is another way of talking about enemy combatant. They no longer use that phrase. They now say unprivileged, meaning you have no rights. Ralph.
Well, Maya, President Obama has authorized Michael Mullen and the U.S. military to set up a special assassination unit operated by the military, and it's being done throughout Afghanistan, it's done throughout Pakistan, but it is also specifically entitled to assassinate American citizens under a very vaguely defined category of aiding or contributing towards terrorism, which means anything. And as you have been indicating, and as the Chinese Human Rights Report makes clear, the distinction between speech and advocacy and so-called acts, as if an act resisting imperialism or an act resisting the a war of aggression against another country is something that entitles the United States to assassinate somebody. This means that the U.S. is a murder incorporated on a planetary scale and is enfolding United States citizens within its reach, and it should be above all made clear that the definition of what constitutes someone who is entitled to be incorporated under this category is so broad as to include journalists, officials of international organizations, foreign political figures, virtually anyone that they design or rather choose to designate as an enemy of U.S. policy, who is articulate, who teaches, who writes, who organizes political activity, can be assassinated and is being assassinated under these very broad Patriot Act totalitarian mandates expanded upon by Obama. I cannot emphasize enough, Maya, that every single one of these Bush programs, Patriot Act, expanded definition of terrorism, has been enlarged by Obama. Whether it's torture, whether it's rendition, whether it's the use of assassination, expanded upon. The U.S. military has participated in this, and it's very important to make clear that the military is at the center of these programs which are applied to U.S. citizens within or without the United States. Again, this report is devastating in its documentation of the elimination of former rights by practice, by the reality of the murder state at work.
Ralph, I want to close this section by looking at dissent in the United States. And we've discussed before how the right to demonstrate is limited in the United States. But there's one particular example that's new to me, and that's in September 2009, protesters who were using the social networking site Twitter and text messages to coordinate demonstrations, they clashed with the police several times in Pittsburgh, where the Group of 20 summit meeting was held. The reaction of the police is something new. Elliot Mattson, 41, was charged with hindering apprehension of the protesters through the Internet. The police searched his home, and the reason he was charged is that by using Twitter and informing people where the police were, this was considered interfering with apprehension, interfering with the work of the police. We'll return after the station identification. This is Taking
Aim. TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Dysfunctional Capitalist State, Part 3, Human Rights Begin at Home, a Scathing Assessment of Social Reality in America. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I want to emphasize here that the Human Rights Report, as it were, of China in exposing the real nature of rights in the United States is extraordinarily powerful, but it is only summary. On March 14, 2010, the New York Times carried the following story, "Contractors Tied in Effort to Track and Kill Militants." It's an article by Dexter Filkins and Mark Mazzetti. Under the cover of a benign government information gathering program, the Defense Department has set up a network of private contractors in Afghanistan and Pakistan to track and kill suspected militants, according to military officials and businessmen in Afghanistan and the United States. Michael D. Furlong hired contractors from private security companies that employ former CIA and special force operatives. Well, these are just off-the-books killers. They're trained assassins of the United States. The contractors, in turn, gather intelligence on the whereabouts of suspected militants. What is a militant? Are you a militant, brother and sister? I'm a militant. Maya's a militant. Anyone who defies the authoritarian state in the United States and defends the rights of the oppressed and opposes these wars of devastation and of conquest is a militant. Suspected militants assassinated. Widely reported, the article continues, that the CIA and the military are attacking militants through unmanned remote-controlled drone strikes. American officials say they became troubled that Mr. Furlong is running an off-the-books assassination operation and spy operation. They are not sure who condoned and supervised his work. Are you kidding? The generally considered illegal operation is hiring contracts to function as covert spies for the United States. It's a detailed article, brothers and sisters. And here, the extraordinary reporter Alan Nairn on March 22nd, breaking news. Indonesian Army Kopassus implicated in new assassinations. Senior Indonesian officials and police and details from government files that the U.S.-backed Indonesian forces, the TNI, are assassinating civilian activists. The killings are part of a secret government program authorized from Jakarta, coordinated by an active-duty U.S.-trained Kopassus Special Forces general who has just acknowledged on the record that his TNI men have had a central role in the killing. The news comes as United States President Barack Obama announces he is reversing long-standing U.S. policy imposed by Congress in response to grassroots pressure of restricting categories of U.S. assistance to TNI, a force which during its years of U.S. training and direction has killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. Human rights, Obama is expanding this operation and removing the nominal restraints upon it and giving it the full authority of his office. The verified details, Nairn continues, concern a series of assassinations and bombings in Aceh on Indonesia's western tip, where local elections were contested by a pro-independence Partai Aceh, a descendant of the pro-independence GAM, Free Aceh. These are political opponents of the authoritarian regime in Indonesia. They're being slaughtered and killed, and it's a U.S. operation just like the School of the Americas. Human rights.
And, Ralph, not only has the U.S. resumed funding against congressional legislation, a congressional ban, but the TNI are going to be brought again to the United States to be trained, just like the U.S. goes with the assassins for Latin America. Let's move on to economic, social, and cultural rights, part three of the report, which focuses on poverty, unemployment, and homelessness here in the United States, where workers' economic, social, and cultural rights cannot be guaranteed. The unemployment rate in the United States in 2009 was the highest in 26 years. The Associated Press reported in April 2009 that nearly 1.2 million businesses and individuals filed for bankruptcy in the previous 12 months, about 4 in every 1,000 people, a rate that's twice as high as 2006. When we look at unemployment in the United States, we note that 1 in 3 black youth under the age of 24, 1 in 3 black youth is unemployed, 34.5%. That's more than 1 in 3. An important article came out since the China report. Unemployment on the rise in virtually every U.S. urban area. It's a compilation from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, which comes out with periodic reports on unemployment. This is an article by Hiram Lee, March 23rd, in the World Socialist website. And he reviews the BLS report for the unemployment crisis that's facing urban areas throughout the United States. And this report was released March 19th. The unemployment rates and a staggering 363 out of 372 metropolitan areas were higher in January than a year before. 35 metropolitan areas registered official jobless rates of 15%, so we can double that if we look at people who are no longer looking for jobs
or
people
partly part-employed.
Part-time employment. And at least 187 metropolitan areas reported unemployment rates of 10% or more. Of the 35 areas with jobless rates, this is the official rate of 15%. Remember, these are people who are still on the unemployment rolls looking for work. 15 were located in California, 6 in Michigan, which is only one quarter of California's population. Look deeper and you note that within California itself, the areas with the highest unemployment rates are all farm communities. These are El Centro, Merced, and Yuba City. The metropolitan areas, however, also have high unemployment. Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Santa Ana, that metropolitan area of Southern California, lost almost a quarter million jobs last year, 248,600 jobs, more than any other metropolitan area in the country. But New York City, Northern New Jersey, Long Island, the New York City metropolitan area, that is the WBAI listening range, almost a quarter million jobs were also lost, 224,220 jobs eliminated. This isn't just people fired. This is not temporary loss of jobs. These are jobs that are eliminated. A quarter million jobs lost. That's half a million jobs lost in just two metropolitan areas, Los Angeles and New York. Ralph.
Well, Maya, the rash of new layoff announcements and government reports and job losses gives lie to the claims of the Obama administration and media that the employment situation is stabilizing. Last Friday, the administration hailed the Labor Department's report that U.S. payrolls shrank by only 36,000 jobs in February, and the official jobless rate remained at 9.7%. In fact, the so-called recovery was limited to the big banks and major corporations, which are still profiting from trillions of dollars in taxpayer bailouts. An article by Barry Gray summarizes some of this data. No let-up in attack on jobs on March 11th, but it is much amplified by the documents from the Labor Department itself. The use of mass unemployment to drive down wages and increase the exploitation of working people constitutes an unprecedented assault on the living standards of the vast majority of the population. It's being carried out under the direction of Obama's administration, and it's creating a social crisis without parallel since the Depression. The Labor Department reported that official unemployment rates have risen in 30 states. 16 states have jobless rates higher than the national average, including Michigan, Nevada, Rhode Island, South Carolina, and California. Unemployment in California, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, Washington, D.C. rose to the highest levels since records have been kept. A second Labor Department report shows that mass layoffs, 50 or more, increased nationally, leading to 182,000 workers losing their jobs in January. Chevron, the second largest oil company, is cutting 2,000 jobs, 3% of its workforce. The Minnesota Department of Human Services announced the cut of full-time mental health jobs.
Ralph, there's a reason to look at unemployment. Unemployment correlates directly with poverty and what is now called euphemistically food insufficiency.
By the way, brothers Hunger. And sisters, food insufficiency is the new Obama government.
Food insecurity, excuse me.
Food insecurity, you're right, is the new Obama euphemism for hunger. You know what metabolic insecurity is? Murder. How about for that for a euphemism, brothers and sisters? This is the big lie dressed up in sociological jargon designed to conceal, to lie and to conceal across the U.S. in big cities, small towns, rural areas. Schools are being closed. Teachers are laid off. College tuition is raised, courses are canceled, bus routes are eliminated, libraries are shut down, parks, swimming pools, recreation, and cultural facilities are being mothballed. It's an overall 37% of the systems workforce in hospitals are now being laid off, brothers and sisters. The Obama administration and the Democratic-controlled Congress have done nothing to provide relief for the unemployed or create jobs to employ the jobless. They will not bail out the cash-starved states and cities. They've bailed out the banks to the tune of $23.7 trillion, and they're demanding that local governments carry out unprecedented attacks on basic social services.
Ralph, the population living in poverty in the United States is now the largest that it's been in 11 years. The Washington Post reported on September 10, 2009, that altogether 39.8 million Americans were living in poverty at the end of 2008, which is a vast increase of almost 3 million from 2007. The number of people aged between 18 and 64, that is adults, had risen to 22.1 million. Up to 8.1 million families are living in poverty. That accounts for over 10% of all the families in the United States. But the poverty rate in New York City was much higher, 18.2%. And if you divide this into the boroughs, you find that nearly 28% of Bronx residents, the borough of Bronx, are living in poverty. And this was reported in the New York Times last September 29th. The New York Times has followed up on March 12th an important article, The Obesity Hunger Paradox by Sam Dolnick. There is more hunger in the Bronx than any other congressional district in the United States, and at the same time, the Bronx has the highest rate of obesity, with residents facing an estimated 85% higher risk of being obese than people in Manhattan. And this is according to public health studies that were conducted at Columbia University. And what this article does is it relates obesity with hunger. According to a survey released in January by the Food Research and Action Center, nearly 37% of residents in the 16th Congressional District, which encompasses the South Bronx, said they lacked the money to buy food at some point in the past 12 months. And this is more than any other congressional district in the country, and it's twice the national average. The Department of Agriculture, as we mentioned before, is no longer using the word hunger. It's saying food insecurity. It looks at food security. And they mean simply that if you are food insecure, you're unable to afford the basics, you're unable to get to a grocery store where you'll find fresh produce. And what you find in the South Bronx are pizza shops, donut shops, fried food stores, anything but healthy food. The other thing that the Department of Agriculture has noted, and the organization studying hunger, is that people who are poor usually work more. It's not that they're unemployed, but they cobble together temporary jobs. And by the time they get home, they are too stressed out and too tired to start cooking healthy food. The Gallup organization conducted a several-year study and has interviewed more than 530,000 people across the nation. It is the largest study of hunger that has ever been conducted. In addition to the Department of Agriculture questions, they asked the pointed question, quote, have there been times in the past 12 months when you did not have enough money to buy food that you or your family needed? Now, this unusually large sample allowed the researchers to zero in on particular trouble spots like the South Bronx that usually get unnoticed. And the South Bronx came up with those startling statistics. If you look at state levels, it usually shows that Mississippi tops the list at 26%, then Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Louisiana, the Carolinas, and Oklahoma. That eliminates the Northeast and the West. But when you break it down, as the Gallup survey did, and you look at congressional districts, which they could because of the large numbers of people that they interviewed, you find that metropolitan areas, and particularly areas such as the South Bronx, in those areas, the situation is devastating. Ralph.
Well, Maya, the New York Times CBS News poll offers a glimpse of the devastating impact of the U.S. unemployment crisis. And let me emphasize, brothers and sisters, that as this so-called health bill, which we're going to examine, the enormity of the sellout that this health bill represents, because what it means, it's going to increase vastly the cost of health care to working class Americans. It puts the insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies in a position to not merely cut services, but to increase prices at random, and it finds and makes working people pay for their diminished health care while it's an open sesame to the insurance companies to increase as they go. But the new poll indicates the following. Massive bank bonuses are to be announced while millions of people have been thrown out of their homes and find it impossible to pay for basic necessities, have depleted limited retirement savings, or lost their health care due to the unemployment crisis. And I want to reference here the fact that not only has this health bill indicated, but Obama has announced that their next target is Social Security and Medicare.
Ralph, before you continue with this important information, I want to add a point. When we talk about food insecurity, that is hunger, we noted that the South Bronx is the area with the worst situation in the United States, but not far behind it comes Brooklyn. Metropolitan New York, the South Bronx, Brooklyn, and Newark all are over 30%, and close to that, close to the situation of the South Bronx, is the situation in Philadelphia and also the situation in Los Angeles.
It's true in Yazoo City, and it's true in Memphis, Tennessee. It's true in San Bernardino, California. It's true, as you say, in Newark, in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, in Demopolis, Alabama. It is across the United States, brothers and sisters, close to 40% so-called food hardship, as the euphemism goes, food instability. Hunger, brothers and sisters, and the new poll revealing the human cost of the United States unemployment. Unemployed adult survey conducted accompanying the survey on the Times website where videos of the unemployed workers discussing their problems. The one quarter of those surveyed have relied on food stamps. One fifth have received help from food charities. Over half said their spouses had to take on extra hours to supplement family income. 53% have borrowed money from family members to make ends meet. 60% have liquidated money from savings and retirement accounts. Unemployment benefits are going to expire. Therefore, to pay bills, people are being forced to sell off their 401k retirement accounts if they have them. One of the survey's most amazing revelations is that half of the unemployed workers have received no unemployment benefits through the nation's restrictive jobless insurance system. 61% state that there's not been enough money to pay for their mortgages, health insurance, food, or other essential expenditures. 54% of those polled by the Times and CBS say they have cut back on medical treatment or visits to the doctors. 47% were without health care coverage. Bill Grierson of Dayton, Ohio, worked at an auto parts maker, Delphi, for 20 years. He's now jobless, has no health insurance for his family. If we have any kind of ailment, we're not able to go to a doctor. It's a new experience for my family, Grierson said. After losing health care, his daughter fell at school and hurt her head. The resulting emergency room bill was $8,000 the family could not pay. Now they're in legal trouble. Watching them play sports, Grierson says of his children, I say play your hardest, but please don't get hurt because we can't do anything about it. Howard Watley, a laid-off construction project worker from North Texas, he has no health insurance for himself and his wife. His unemployment benefits are set to expire. We can't afford medicines. We can't afford doctor's visits. One quarter have been threatened with foreclosure or eviction. It's 70% of the respondents reported being stressed. suffering from anxiety, stress, and mental disorder. 55% reported suffering from insomnia. A quarter have tried to find help from mental health professionals. They can't afford them. 40% say as a result of unemployment, there are drastic changes in the behavior of their children. Every time I think about money, I shut down. There is none, said Tammy Linville, 29, of Louisville, Kentucky, the mother of two small children. I get major panic attacks. I don't know what we're going to do. Nancy Perry, who lost her job at a Florida child care center, no unemployment insurance, suffers from insomnia, headaches, and depression. 40% of those surveyed said that they are trying to find a part of the country where they might be able to locate work. Two-thirds are trying to switch careers. 44% have tried job retaining without any prospect of jobs. Desperate individual responses, enormous emotional suffering, no social and economic response from the so-called Obama administration, which is simply a shill for the bankers and the corporate the gangsters in the United States.
Ralph, there is a social response. The social response is to cut. And the one of the aspects of the new health care bill, I hate calling it a health care bill, one of it is to slice Medicare, slice health coverage for those over 65. And across the country, there have been cuts in all the social safety net programs. We've been talking about people who are food, quote, insecure, that is, going hungry. The statistics show 36.5 million Americans, about one-eighth of the entire U.S. population, took part in the food stamp program in August 2009. And this is up 7 million from 2008. That's from below 30 million up to 36.5 million, from 29 million up to 36.5 million. However, only two-thirds of those eligible for food stamps actually receive them, and the food stamps program is inadequate. It's $130 per month per individual in a family, not enough to feed a family. Across California, these Arnold Schwarzenegger and the legislature have been slicing the social safety net programs, and most onerous are the programs cutting the health care programs for young children, the Healthy Families Program, slicing that program, as well as the home care programs that where people are allowed to remain in their home because the state and the federal government subsidize home care for people with disabilities and the elderly who need assistance. It's only the tip of the iceberg. An article in Bankrate.com, Invisible Threat to Home Values, notes that one-third of all home mortgage holders have a loan balance that's much higher than the value of their home. These are called underwater borrowers. This was revealed in a Congressional Oversight Panel report on the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. Underwater owners are more likely to lose their property to foreclosure. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the recent Zogby International poll found that 72% of Americans consider themselves poor and imagine themselves becoming more so. Half of Americans say that they are worried constantly about money, most or all of the time. Brothers and sisters, the United States Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke has called for massive austerity. In 2 days of testimony before the Banking Committee of the House of Representatives and Senate, Federal Reserve Board Chairman Ben Bernanke called for the Obama administration and Congress to agree upon a plan to sharply reduce the U.S. budget deficit over the next decade. He delivered the Federal Reserve semi-annual monetary policy report to Congress, to the House Financial Service Committee, and the Senate Banking Committee. Both his opening statements and the ensuing discussions with committee members reflect the concerns of banks and finance houses. We're going to return to this extraordinary declaration by Bernanke, the author of the entire crisis with the Federal Reserve sanctioning the gangsters. But the social crisis underscored by the release of government reports shows that Wall Street profits are soaring, but the Bernanke representation as to what is to be done in terms of cutting the deficit means wholesale cuts in social services, Medicare, and Social Security. The onslaught of the gangsters of the corporate capitalist elite is only in its little beginning phase, brothers and sisters, and its principal instrument is the Barack Obama administration. We are not going to be suckered into calling for support for the Democrats, whether they are running in Massachusetts or anywhere else, because they line up and they sanction this assault. They are the instruments of ruling class assault upon the survivability of our people. Yes, there are struggles ahead. They are not going to be led by oppressors. We're going to mobilize our many. And the struggle is for control over the destiny of this country and power in the United States.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Dysfunctional Capitalist State, Part 3, Human Rights Begin at Home, A Scathing Assessment of Social Reality in America. We'll continue with this subject next week. Please join us. And visit our website, www.takingaimradio.com, and contact us at takingaim@patbell.net.
Nadie le da respuesta a mis preguntas.
On Saturday, March 27th, join the Wives Without Rights organizers meeting. For 12 years, two Cuban